My name is Joy, and I, a little bit about me, I love to eat. I'm a big foodie. I grew up in Hong Kong, but have been called Chicago, the Chicago area home for the last 11 years. I was previously on staff with a campus ministry called InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and I was doing that for about 7 years, and this summer just transitioned into a role at a nonprofit serving Asian American women and girls in advocacy and policy work. So it's a little bit about me. It's been really fun to be a part of the Vineyard family the last couple years as we've gone through so many changes and have been formed in so many deep ways. External changes I can look at is the fact that we have this stage, the new branding that we have, the really awesome lounge area out there. Internally, we've been formed, we've reaffirmed our values as a church. And formation, being the part of the people of God, often involves this formation and transformation into being who God has called us to be. And the formation and transformation that God calls us to is often beautiful, really powerful. I just think it's really beautiful. But often, it's also very hard. We carry our significant formative experiences from childhood, from different experiences of trauma, our learned beliefs and mindsets into the spaces that we grow, that we come into and grow together. Some of you might know this. I might have mentioned it in the past. I grew up to parents who were missionaries in Hong Kong. And it was a different time back then. But my parents lived depending on ministry support, paycheck by paycheck every month, depending on God and their communities for support. But what made things tough was that my parents had a really broken marriage. Part of this was because their marriage and our family was plagued by my dad's battle with a mental illness. He was out of work for about 7 to 8 years of my childhood, and one result of this is that money was extremely tight at home. I specifically remember how that experience of financial stress and scarcity formed me during a season when I was getting connected to a new church, a new youth group when I was in middle school. This was a beautiful season where I was making new friends. Every Friday night, my two older brothers and I would head into the city with this new group of friends that we felt so much belonging to and we connected so well with. It was an amazing time. I still think about some of those early memories very fondly. We would stay late after youth group, jamming out on the instruments. That's actually where I learned to lead worship for the first time. Some of us spent memorable nights chatting away on something called MSN Messenger. Anyone remember that? We didn't have AOL in Hong Kong, but we primarily used MSN. And as someone with a tough home life, just being together in this community meant so much to me. But one of the dynamics of growing up in Hong Kong was that a lot of my friends were wealthy. These were international kids I hung out with from my international schools, who had parents who worked in finance and architecture or real estate. And Hong Kong was one of the financial capitals of the world. So it was really painful. It was a painful experience to grow up with experiencing lack and scarcity in the context of wealth and abundance. After youth group, we would go out to the food court, I remember this, to the nearby mall to eat. And rather than eating the super cheap, which I look back now very fondly, curry fish balls on a stick and savory glutinous rice rolls. Rather than that, my friends would eat in this food court with more expensive food and cuisine, like nice Thai food and a lot of Western food. Actually, a lot of the American food were the more fancy things. I specifically remember this one burger place with this juicy Angus beef burger served with these crispy crunchy French fries. But it was so expensive. So were the Auntie Anne pretzels that my friends would sometimes get to eat for dessert. And while everyone got pretzels and compared to different sauces, whether it was honey mustard or garlic parm or other ones I don't remember, they would turn to me and ask, "Don't you want a pretzel?" And I'd swallow, and I'd lie and say something like, "Nah, I'm not really hungry," knowing I couldn't afford it, but secretly salivating from the cinnamon sugar that was surrounding me. Sometimes I would try to ask my mom for cash to spend for some money, but it was agonizing. Just the memory of those moments, pleading or asking her for a little bit more, would cause my heart to race a little, my shoulders to tense up. As reasonable as my explanations might have been for a little bit more money, I would feel her anxiety every time I asked for more. I felt it deeply. I would see her face scrunch up and stiffen with stress. I felt her pain often and her fear as she might say something like, "You kids always just take and take and take. There's just not enough." Although my mom didn't know it and certainly didn't intend it, facing this so often shaped my understanding of provision and security. These were painful experiences that have formed me in such a way that I'm still tempted to live in a way of scarcity and fear regarding my finances and what the future will hold even today. Even now, when I'm so far from being that 12 to 14-year-old girl in Hong Kong. Perhaps you, like me, know what it's like to be driven to control our current situation so that we never have to live a certain way, experiencing pain or scarcity again. Because I never want to live that way again, my temptation is to hoard or to be controlled with my choices that I make financially. Are there ways that you or your communities are tempted to control, to hoard, and maybe to self-protect? In fact, we're surrounded in a society and a culture of control and self-protection. Maybe it's in our workplaces, our schools, certainly in our economic capitalistic system driven by profit. But what I love about scripture is that it's full of these real life stories of real people with real issues and real traumas. And today I invite us back into the story of God's people, to the Israelites in the time of the Exodus. I've spoken in this drawing from Exodus and Leviticus a few times, but God has somehow like brought me back to the story of God's people being formed multiple times. So I invite you to lean in with me again. So imagine with me back to a time and context where God's people have finally, after generations, been rescued out of slavery and oppression to the Egyptian Empire. Generations of being formed to believe that their worth is in what their labor provides. Generations of probably being formed to believe that God is weak and God is an absent God. Generations of being formed under oppression to despair. And what's so important about the story of Exodus that we dive into today is that God's people knew the same dynamic of living in a society and being surrounded by people driven by control or fear or the sense that there's just not enough and of scarcity. Just as my experience of lack and anxiety around money shaped me, God's people have been shaped by their lives in Egypt to think that they are the safest and most secure when they can control what they have and what they know around them. But yet God removes them. God removes them and rescues them from that place of control and takes them out into the wilderness where they have absolutely nothing. Nothing around them. Into this liminal, in-between space of nothingness. So with that in mind, would you join me as I read the text for us this morning? It is long, so I ask you to pay attention to how the Israelites are responding in their context. What are they feeling? What do they believe about God? From Exodus 16. The whole congregation of the Israelites set out from Elim and came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they have departed from the land of Egypt. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, where we sat by the pots of meat and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way I will test them, whether they will follow my instructions or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him, what are we? Your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, 'Draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining.' And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked toward the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in a cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses, "I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God." In the evening, quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there on the surface of the wilderness was a fine, flaky substance as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather as much of it as each of you needs, an omer per person according to the number of persons, all providing for those in their tents." The Israelites did so, some gathering more, some less. But when they measured it with an omer, those who gathered much had nothing over. Those who gathered little had no shortage. They gathered as much as each of them needed. And Moses said to them, "Let no one leave any of it over until morning." But they did not listen to Moses. Some left part of it until morning, and it became wormy and rotten, and Moses was angry with them. Morning by morning, they gathered it, as much as each needed, but when the sun grew hot, it melted. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much food, two omers apiece. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil, and all that is left over put aside to be kept until morning." So they put it aside until morning, just as Moses commanded them, and it did not rot, and there were no maggots in it. Moses said, "Eat it today, for today is the Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none." On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, and they found none. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commandments and instructions? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you food for 2 days. Each of you, stay where you are. Do not leave your place on the seventh day." So the people rested on the seventh day. This is the word of the Lord. Now, the Israelites might have been relieved, right, at first to be in the wilderness. Finally, we're out of Egypt. We're free. And maybe as they were escaping, they dreamed of where Moses would take them to, a home and a land that could finally be their own. Maybe a luxurious oasis, somewhere safe and abundant, a land with rivers and streams of fresh water to drink from, with shade and shelter from trees in the rich forests, maybe with soft soil to finally plant their own food, pillows of grass where they can roll around in the joy of their long-awaited freedom. Instead, the community find themselves led into this wilderness, a dry, barren desert called the Judean wilderness, with no water, with no shade, and with no food. There are a couple pictures of the wilderness that I'm going to show here, just to give you a little picture of the Judean wilderness. It's a brutal and lifeless place. It's miles and miles of land that's just constantly dry, constantly barren, that's really hot. In fact, the wilderness was such a place of lifelessness that if people needed to go across the wilderness to get somewhere, they would rather spend much more time traveling around the wilderness than to take the shortcut through it. Ultimately, the wilderness is not a place where we want to be in. It's neither here nor there. It's not where we want to be. It's not where we're coming from. It's this in-between liminal place of our journey. In contrast to the abundance, wealth, and control that the Israelites were at least surrounded by in Egypt, the wilderness has nothing, no resources, and it's completely uncontrolled and completely unpredictable. How are you or your community in the wilderness? Maybe it's that recent breakup, that financial challenge, a battle with that illness, that broken relationship with a family member or friend that just seems irreparable. Maybe it's a life change that you were so looking forward to, only to experience it and face disappointment in the gap between what you had hoped for and what you are actually experiencing now. The pandemic. We can never go back to life pre-pandemic, nor do we want to in many ways, but we also haven't fully gotten out of it. We're collectively, as a society, have the experience of going through two long wilderness years. And as November comes around, as I look towards the midterm elections, I'm reminded back to just 2 years ago of the really painful, divisive elections that we had faced just recently. We're still, in many ways, as a society, living and sitting in a place of lifelessness, barrenness, and disillusionment. So, as God's people find themselves here in the wilderness, this in-between place, they're rightfully furious. They are angry. They're angry that God brought them out here, and they scream at Moses, "You have brought us out into the wilderness to kill us all with hunger. We would rather die in Egypt as slaves than die here. Sure, life was hard, but at least we had food. At least we knew what to expect and what was coming. We have nothing here. You promised us a land flowing with milk and honey, but this is where you take us?" God's people are terrified of the realities of the wilderness. How can a good God who promises life and abundance lead us to this place? What good can possibly come from this? And perhaps that is a question that some of you have been asking about the wilderness places that you, like me, have found yourself in. Why am I here? Well, what we find in the story that helps us understand the heart and character of God is what is found in what God does next. God hears their complaints. This is repeated throughout Exodus and multiple times throughout the text this morning, that God heard their complaints. And God then responds to their complaints by feeding the community and providing the system of care and provision and rest. God hears our complaints. God cares for our needs. God gives them bread to eat each morning, providing nourishment and sustenance out of the lifelessness and nothingness of the wilderness. You see, God is revealing God's character as one who transforms even the most barren, lifeless wilderness places and turns it into places of life. That is who God is. As we worshiped and sang this morning, that is who God is. Our God can transform lifelessness into life and hunger into fullness. And what strikes me here in the repetition of morning and evening is that God doesn't just feed them one time, as if God is like, okay, I fed you, you can shut up now. As if God doesn't want us to hear us express our needs. No, God feeds them daily. Far from being a God who just wants to do what we ask to silence us or pacify us or appease us, God cares about what we have to say and hears our cries. God hears and sees us even in the context of our complaints in the wilderness. God gives voice to their needs even when they're angry, even when they have no faith and no trust in God. Friends, God is not afraid of or turned away by our complaints. In fact, Moses specifically says to the people, "Draw near to God because he heard your complaining." God hears us and sees us, and God draws near to us. What happens next captivates me. The people go on physically to look toward the wilderness, the never-ending, like, barren wilderness. They look towards it, and the glory of the Lord appears. God's very glorious presence and nearness is with us and appears to us even when we complain because of what we are facing in the wilderness. It's not contained to the tabernacle or a temple or a holy space in this moment, but it's right there in the wilderness. As someone who knows what it feels like to be silenced, as an Asian woman who knows what it feels like to be told to just put my head down and stomach my needs or my desires, to put other people first, to not express your pain, just hide it, don't bother people, be like, keep harmony, I find so much hope and love. and healing in the way that God listens to them. It almost seems that God is restoring their agency to speak. And from being a people who are slaves who probably could not express complaints for fear of repercussion because it could get them in trouble, whose voices were silenced, I wonder how the people's complaining was actually an affirmation of their humanity. God affirms our voices, our humanity listens to what we need, and creates systems for care for us, all in the context of the wilderness. Perhaps, friends, I argue that perhaps this revelation of who God is and God's goodness to us needs to happen in the context of the wilderness. You see, it's here in the wilderness where we are left without our illusions of control, where we are taken from systems of oppression, where we can be still and pay attention to God. The wilderness is therefore an opportunity for us to be formed by God, a place to be shaped into a people who know God's love, compassion, and care. It is away from our man-made systems of coercion, greed, scarcity, and control that God reveals God's self to the people, and where the people have a chance to really see and experience a new way of being together. I, as I mentioned earlier, just transitioned out of several years of ministry of InterVarsity, and when I took part of the summer to reflect, I'm amazed at what God revealed to me. When I first came on staff of InterVarsity, I was told that I needed to raise thousands and thousands of dollars to serve students. I was floored. I was so torn because I really felt called to it. I really was torn between this desire to come on staff, serve students, see communities transformed by the beauty of the gospel, but torn also with that and my desire to honor my mom, who had endured so much hardship for me to make it through high school and then college. I felt like I was betraying my mom in many ways by choosing this life of raising support, which was so caused her pain, and by not pursuing a job that made a lot more money and was a lot more stable. But I remember feeling and sensing God say to me in those moments of doubts and confusion, "I've got you. You think that raising this many amounts of money is a lot, but you're gonna see me provide way more than that. You're gonna see me care for you, and you're gonna know my care and provision unlike you have ever felt before." It was terrifying to say yes to God in this moment, but it was a healing, even as I look back, in many ways a healing journey for me. And fundraising continued to feel like a wilderness in many ways. There are flawed things about the system, and there are ways I wrestled with it right until the end. But I also know that it was in the context of this journey and at many times being in the wilderness that God gave me this gentle invitation to face the thing that I was most afraid of, the fear of financial insecurity, the fear of inviting others to come around me and to support me, the fear that I will not have enough for tomorrow. But here, at the other end of that journey, 7 years later, I look back and I wonder if God maybe probably brought some healing to my mom's experience, the different ways that I was cared for and provided for. And as I end my time with InterVarsity this summer, I celebrate and I know the ways that God has healed and provided for me. And I also am grateful for this church that has supported me through a lot of that journey as well. It's in places like the wilderness where we can look and see God's glory. Look and see how much God can provide. God is desperate for us to know and really know that we don't have to depend on these predictable systems of control to provide the security and abundance that we long for. Instead, it's right here where you feel like you have nothing. It's right here in the least expected places, right here in the wilderness where you have access to God's care. Not because of anything we've done, but simply because we belong to God and we are God's people. What good news for us who find ourselves in the wilderness. That's right here that God also provides rest. See, not only is our daily need for food and sustenance provided for, but so is rest to be our full selves. God introduces the practice of the Sabbath to the people here, where every day they get to wake up knowing that food is ready for them. I imagine the Israelites stretching in the morning after a night of sleep, stepping outside where they smell the freshness of manna, where they grab, then they grab their baskets and joyfully go out to collect it for their families and their communities. But it gets even better because they learn that once a week on the seventh day, they don't even have to step outside. They don't even have to do the work of picking up their baskets. They just get an extra portion to eat. They get to rest. They no longer have to live like they used to, where they had to trade in the bricks that they would create just to get food to eat. They get a day off. They get to rest. They get to hang out with their families and do what they love to do and rest. Imagine what the practice of rest might mean for a community of people just freed from slavery, where their whole lives and identities were tied to work. Some of us maybe also need to remember that to be God's people is to be gifted with Sabbath rest and to choose to step into it. Our capitalistic world around us makes that so difficult and challenges us as it measures our worth by what we produce. Our values are shaped by what we do. So obedience to the Sabbath is stepping into our identity of God as God's people. What does it look like for you to trust God and rest in God's provision? What does it look like for you to receive the gift of rest, even as we seek to give gift others with the gift of rest here in our community? God's heart for the people is for them to really know, like really know, that God is dependable and consistent in God's care. My mom, who I've mentioned a few times now, loves milk tea. Specifically Hong Kong milk tea, which I absolutely love too. It's this strong black tea, very strong black tea with a dollop of sweetened condensed milk that's both creamy and sweet. And whenever I would wake up in the morning whenever I wake up in the morning at home, my mom would have tea ready for me on the breakfast table for me as I got ready for school. Sometimes she would put it in a thermos and send me off to school with it, making sure that I had it. And I knew that I could depend on having milk tea from my mom every single morning. Simply part of what it meant to be my mom's daughter, specifically my mom's daughter, is to be loved in the morning with this cup of tea. She loved doing this and sharing her love for tea with me. She needed me to know that her love and care for me, and I think she did it through feeding me and sustaining me with tea. It was a simple provision for my mom, and it was consistent. And I imagine that she was so happy to know that I loved it too. And I think I knew she loved me because of this. Similarly, God is desperate for God's people to know and really know and believe that God will take care of them consistently. God wants God's people to know and really believe that God's got us. That rest and provision is provided for us, like a mother who wants her children to know and trust in her care. The theme of testing actually flows throughout the text of Exodus, and God specifically says, I will test them to see if they will follow my instruction or not. And when I hear testing, I get kind of nervous. I'm like, why is God testing God's people? But I think it is a testing out of desperation. God's like, I need you to know. I need you to know that you are loved. I need you to trust that you are cared for. I need you to know that you belong to me. And with me, you are in the safest place that you can possibly be. That even in moments when you seem to have nothing with your name, when you have nothing good surrounding you, like the Israelites with no land, which meant that they probably had no economic or political security, that they were enough. I didn't do anything to deserve my mom's tea. I simply had to be her daughter. Will you, church, trust God to be God to you, even in wilderness places in which you find yourself or your community or your world around you? And finally, as I close, I want to perhaps suggest that our God, who might lead us at times into these wilderness or liminal places that seem lifeless, is a God worth following and a God worth trusting, because ultimately, God is a God who turns wilderness places itself into a gift. I don't say that lightly, knowing the wilderness places that some of us are in. Yet the wilderness contains the gift of intimacy with God and experience of God's rest and provision. it might be a gift of space to see and resist the anxieties and control of the empires and powers of the world that we live in, to find rest in God. Though barren and lifeless, it is in fact an immensely important way for us to know God and his intimate love for us. So I end with two invitations for us this morning. The first invitation is that as the Israelites were formed in community as a people, we are also formed as a community and invited into spiritual community. God forms us so much and formed me so much in the context of being in spiritual community. And if you are here today feeling alone in the struggle or wrestling with God and feeling like you're doing it all by yourself, know that we as a church want to walk with you. We believe in life together. Ted alluded to this, but we have small groups that are launching this fall, and I encourage you to sign up for one. If that feels like a really intimidating or big step, maybe talk to someone who's part of a small group, or many of our staff in the welcome table out there would love to connect you. Would you join with the people of God who look into the wilderness as a people collectively and see the glory of the Lord there? My second invitation is to be real, simply to be real with the wilderness places that you are in. God is not afraid or scared of by your complaining, by your laments, by your grief and pain and frustrations with the disappointments that you're facing or the losses that you felt, the unmet longings, the dryness of your current season. God can handle it, and God invites us to voice them. So with that, I will leave us in a couple moments to ask ourselves these two questions. What is the wilderness place that you are in that God might be inviting you to be real about and to be honest and maybe even angry with God about? And second, is there a way that you want to lean on community and how God is forming you? If you particularly want a space to be real with God about the liminal space, the wilderness place that you're in, please get prayer. Our prayer team will be ready to pray with you and to walk with you. And so I leave you with these two questions to reflect on as I invite Ted up.